It was a rough start for farmers this year. A very late winter followed by an overly wet spring meant many crops had to wait a month or more longer than normal to get into the ground. So what will that mean come harvest time? What does it mean for farmers' bottom line? And what about food prices? We'll ask farmers and a crop expert about that this hour. And we'll also talk about how farming is changing in western Wisconsin and take a look at what's happening with the Farm Bill this hour on the Westside Ag Update. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this morning. I'm joined by three men who aren't afraid to get their hands dirty. Joining me in studio, first, I'd like to welcome Jerry Clark. Jerry is a UW Extension Crops and Soils Educator who works at offices in Chippewa and Eau Claire counties. Jerry Clark, thanks for coming.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me, Rich.
Good to see you again. Next, I'd like to introduce Craig Meyer. He's a crop farmer from down around the Osseo area who is also District 4 Director for the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Craig, thanks for joining us.
You bet. Pleasure to be here.
And joining us by phone from his office in Madison, I'd like to introduce Jim Holt. Jim Holt is a beef, corn, and alfalfa grower from Elk Mound who was recently elected president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. Jim Holt, thank you for taking the time.
Good to be with you, Rich.
Good to have you. Also, congratulations on the election. I haven't talked to you since before then.
Well, thank you.
And listeners, we'd like to get your help in crafting this program. We've got three ag experts on the program now, and this is when you call in and ask them their questions. If you're a farmer who's had to delay the planting, give us a call. Let us know how it's looking and how harvest season is shaping up. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We've got wide open phone lines. Also, if you'd rather, you can go to our Westside Facebook page. Just look for The West Side, and then you can register a question, comment, or complaint there. Gentlemen, I'll start with you, Jerry Clark. I was driving north this weekend, heading up to my hometown in Superior, and I was glancing at the corn and on the side of US 53. And I noticed that the corn's progress varied a lot from field to field. Why is that?
Well, so much of the planting season, not just from the weather that might affect the general area, you have soil types that change drastically, especially as you go across any kind of geographic area. Chippewa County itself has numerous types of soils, especially if you look on the east side that has more of a silty and clay type soil to the west side that has more of a sandy type soil. So sands tend to warm up, sandy soils tend to warm up more, they drain better. Farmers can maybe get into fields a little earlier if they have those types of soils versus if you have a heavier type of soil. Topography is going to have a play in that as well. The crop that you're trying to plant, is it corn or soybeans? Is it a small grain or alfalfa? That type of thing is going to drive that decision too as to when you can get in the field. But for the most part, what we're seeing is those sandier areas were planted somewhat more on time, still delayed somewhat. But where we really saw the delay in planting was anyone that had a heavier type soil with more silt and clay in it, or it was a poorly well-drained or poorly drained soil for that matter.
So for people like me who have very little knowledge about agriculture or about the soil types around here, within western Wisconsin, where do we look for the heavier types of soils and where are the lighter, sandier soils in general?
Well, it varies so much. I think in general, I think if you took eastern, the central part of the state, eastern Chippewa County over to Marathon County, over to Shawano, that type of area tends to be a little heavier in general terms. Sandier soils maybe from western Chippewa towards Dunn County, that type of direction. But so many, it depends on where the glacier settled, how things shook out. So much of our area was glaciated that really drives the determination of what was deposited in those areas. So,
all right, and Jim Holt, you're out towards near Elk Mound there, and what type of soil and when did you get your crops in the ground this year?
Well, as Jerry explained, most of us do have a varying soils. Mine probably are probably two-thirds of the lighter side and one-third of the heavier side. So as Jerry explained, there's more opportunity to get on those lighter soils quicker. We were probably, I would say, a good 10 days, maybe 2 weeks later than normal. The sandy soils, as Jerry explained, also do recover quicker and seem to get their growth faster just because they warm up sooner. So on those sandier soils, early on, the corn looked pretty good. And as we all know, a farmer's never happy with the weather, so now we're in a position where we'd like a little more rain to get to feed those crops some.
Sure. Sandy soil warms up better. I mean, I am such a novice here. You guys are going to think it's a dumb question, but why does that matter? Why does it matter for the soil to warm up faster? What does it need a certain type of temp to get the corn to grow or the soybeans?
Well, the soil temperature is very instrumental in when the seeds germinate and how quickly they grow, how quickly the nutrients are available. Cold soil, the nutrients just aren't as available as quickly, and so the growth level is much slower on those heavier soils in the initial part of the season.
All right. Craig Meyer, down by Osseo, how are you looking? And when did you get your corn in the ground?
Well, I have the heavier clay loam soil, so I only got about 25% of my corn planted and probably about 25% of my beans and filed prevent plant acres on the rest of it. So it was a pretty rough spring.
You filed, what did you say, prevent plant?
Crop insurance.
Oh, okay.
It was very, clay soils just never did dry out. It Memorial Day weekend probably was about the best shot we had it going, and then Memorial Day it started raining about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was running planter and rained, I think, about the rest of that week, and that's kind of when I gave up, I guess. So
is there a timeline then, Craig, like, once you get past a certain date, it's not even worth the bother to plant?
Well, on the preventative plan of crop insurance, the magic date is May 31st on corn and June 10th on beans. Hmm. So we were bumping up against that date there. So decided to pull out and hang it up for the year.
So then the 25% that you did plant, I mean, will that be something that'll be harvestable, or are you going to... Because I've been hearing that a lot of farmers might just chop up their corn that they planted and use it for silage.
Hope to harvest it. It's getting in later. It's a little behind. You know, being a crop farmer, you've got no cattle to feed it to, so you
right.
Want that crop to mature. And so that'll be the telltale sign here as we get into fall, whether it makes it or not. So.
Hmm. And, Jerry, it got awfully cold last night, or it felt cold to me. I was almost expecting to see some frost on the ground this morning. But so are farmers, they're racing against the clock now?
Yeah, I think it all depends. Like Craig and Jim have said, it depends on what your needs are. As a crop farmer, you know, Craig's hoping to get that to dry grain so he has something to sell on those 25% that he was able to plant. But a lot of dairy farmers were still planting after the 4th of July because they need the feed for their animals. Mm-hmm. So dairy farmers, livestock producers, if you have beef cattle, you're probably still going to try to plant something so you have some feed. Otherwise, you may contract with someone like Craig that, you know, that 25%, maybe I can buy it from him for silage rather than Craig selling it for grain. So I think there's a lot of those types of discussions going on around the dairy industry, as there is a hay shortage or a feed shortage that we experienced in the spring and because of the later planting. So those types of discussions, I think, are and deals are probably being made or contracts being written for purchasing more feed corn from traditional grain producers so dairy producers can have extra feed for the winter.
So, Craig, why couldn't you have just planted some corn and sold it as silage? Would that not have been profitable for you?
It was probably a possibility. The thing is, I guess I'm getting old enough. I've been around the block a couple times. Is the later you get and you get it planted, is it going to make, as you talked about the cool weather here, it's really slowed things up as far as the corn. I know nobody likes the hot, humid weather, but that's really what was pushing mm-hmm. the corn along. And now it's slowed down again. And so, it's just like any other type of farming you're gambling, putting that in there, hoping it's going to make it. So it's it's a toss-up.
Yeah, it's a toss-up, and I can only imagine what might be going through farmers' minds, because it's a toss-up worth a lot of money.
Well, and the capital requirements of today of putting a crop in the ground, the risks are much higher than they were 5, even 10 years ago. And so you run the pencil a little harder before you decide to just slop it in the ground.
I imagine. And Jim Holt, what about soybeans? I mean, we've been talking about corn here, but I thought I had read somewhere that soybeans can handle a shorter, a later planting a little better than corn can.
Well, that's true to some extent. I'm sure Craig as well probably plants a variety of maturities, both in corn and soybeans, and many of us have looked at changing varieties as the spring progressed because of the shorter time frame the crop is going to have. And so to the extent possible, you try to make some of those changes, but as Craig pointed out, there's also a time when the risk doesn't merit going forward. So we try to use the tools that are available to us through the industry of seed, and at some point you have to go one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Craig, any soybeans that you planted?
Yeah, I got about, 25% of my bean crop in. And the crops I did get in, some of them are on the lighter ground, some rented ground that I have that's on the sand. And that was, you could get in there and go. Mm-hmm. Whereas my home turf soils are, say, clay loam, pretty sticky. So.
Okay. Do soybeans have a quicker turnaround then than corn do?
Well,
corn does?
One thing, yeah, they mature a little bit quicker as they – it depends on the variety that you plant.
Sure.
We can – and it's based on your geographic location or how much length of a growing season you have. But typically, they'll continue to flower throughout a growing season. So even if we get a late frost, which I think every farmer is hoping for this year, is that the frost can be as late as possible. That will help settle a few more pods and beans on that plant, because soybeans will continue to flower up until the point where they basically are frozen or they die back. So, and they start to mature. So that soybeans are a little more forgiving than corn in that standpoint. Is that with corn? Now we're seeing some of the earliest planted corn is starting to tousle.
And what does that mean for those that might not understand?
Well,
it?
You start to see that tassel come out and the silks, and that forms the ear that has to pollinate. The pollen is on that tassel, and that will land on the silk. And another neat thing about corn, each silk leads to a kernel. And maybe people don't understand that, but every silk you see, especially if you purchase sweet corn and there's always that brown silk on there, every one of those silks leads to a kernel. And so you have to have pollen land on that silk tube to fertilize that ovule that's in there to form that kernel. So you basically have maybe a week or 10 days of viable pollen to land on that silk tube to get pollination. You got basically that one shot to get a crop. Mm-hmm. So therefore, dry weather or anything that can happen during that period can affect yield dramatically. So that's why with soybeans, there's a little bit more forgiving there. They can mature a little later. But with corn, you've got one shot. And usually 60 days from the time a corn plant is pollinated, you got 60 days. And that's when you can kind of estimate it's going to be mature. So we'll need a 60 – now that we're starting to get into that pollination stage, we'd like to see 60 days of frost-free so we can maximize the yield on the maturity end.
I thought I had heard that it's good for it to be raining or for it to to rain during pollination for corn.
Well, that's true. That silk has to be moist in order to attract that – to catch that pollen that falls.
Oh.
And if that's dry, if that silk tube is dry from a drought, it will not pollinate. So right now, if you're on sandy soil, again, it gets back to the soil type thing. If you're pollinating and it's drought stressed and you're on a sandier soil, you may not have the yield you want. But if you're on a heavier soil where there's a little more water maybe being held in that soil, the plant may look better and have more water available for that silk tube to catch that pollen. So drought really affects dry weather at pollination is probably the worst timing for dry weather.
So. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of all over the place. We couldn't say that right now is when we need rain, is what you're saying.
Well, any farmer that has it, that whose crop is tousling and pollinating wants to make sure they have moisture now, where if some has just been planted on the 4th of July and it's basically approaching knee-high or it's not going to maybe set a tassel for another month yet, then you'd probably want to see moisture at that point. So we need rain throughout the year. It's just certain times are more critical than others.
It's been a crazy couple of years for crop farmers. Craig, last year we had very, very dry conditions, and I remember driving again out in the counties and seeing they almost looked like pineapple plants because the corn were so stunted and they were turning brown, the leaves were. And so that combined with this, and you've already, you know, filed for the crop insurance. I mean, what have the last couple of years done for, to your operation?
Well, in my operation down where I was last year, we were quite fortunate. We had some showers that come through, and with the heavier soil, we had a crop. I guess I can't complain. But
okay.
You go a mile to the north of me, 2 miles over the ridge where I live, and it was dried up, as you were saying, pineapple, and it was pretty ugly. So, but it makes it tough here. As I said, to me, the capital requirements to plant corn and beans now, you're talking $300 a bag for seed corn, and your corn starter, I know mine was $650 a ton, I think, for my starter.
And what is the starter, the ammonia?
Fertilizer you put on when you're planting your corn, or any fertilizer. So I think what made it tough for a lot of guys to not go with Prevent, as I did, if they had laid down pre-plant fertilizer or fertilizer before they planted, they spread already had it down, or they maybe had prepaid for fertilizer. That made it a little tougher not to move forward and try to get it in the ground, whereas I was fortunate I hadn't laid nothing down, and it was a little easier to pull the plug. So for, as you say, with cattle, or if you had something down, it might not have been so easy to give it up.
And Jim, with the crops that you plant, other than is the corn for the cattle that you raise? Is that so? You're raising your own feed as well, or do you cash that out?
We do both with the corn. I've finished a number of cattle over the last number of years, and so a good share of it can be fed to the cattle, and some is sold to the market as well.
Okay, so how about your operation? The last couple of years, or this year so far, and last year was it pretty rough?
Well, there's always challenges every year, and as Craig pointed out, many of us do purchase crop insurance, and there were some of my crops were dry enough last year that I did receive some payment through that crop insurance I bought, and it's a process of managing your risk, and Craig accurately pointed out that our costs continue to change, continue to go up, the business aspect of farming is to learn how to manage those different things as best you can, even though Mother Nature does what she wishes. So sometimes we're just stuck.
Mm-hmm. What is the nature of the relationship between a farmer and a crop insurance adjuster?
Generally, the adjusters have experience in agriculture, have experience with crops, so they're pretty talented in doing a good job in that. I've never been disappointed with the people that I've visited with.
Okay. All right, well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, the number is 1-800-228-5615 if you want to give it a call in. We're talking about agriculture, and we're going to be, I think, segueing into a little bit about the changes in farming and how in Western Wisconsin over the years and recent times. If you'd like to get a question or a comment into either of our guests, Jim Holt, Craig Meyer, or Jerry Clark, the number 1-800-228-5615. You can also check out the Westside Facebook page or the Westside Archives by going to WPR.org or looking on Facebook for The West Side. We're talking about how farmers are dealing with a late planting season and all other things agriculture this hour. I'm Rich Kramer, joined again by Jim Holt of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau, Craig Meyer of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and crops and soils educator Jerry Clark. If you've got a question or comment, give us a call, 800-228-5615. We'll be back in just a bit.
Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, helping healthcare professionals put their skills to work in the wake of a disaster through Weaver, Wisconsin's Emergency Assistant Volunteer Registry. More info available at weavrwi.org. Support also comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering full real estate services from listing to selling properties. Current listings, mortgage calculator, and other information is online at wisconsinrealty.org.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side Agriculture Update on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this morning. We're talking about how a late planting season is impacting farmers. We're going to get into a little bit of discussion about how winter kill may be affecting hay and feed. And coming up, we're going to be talking about how farming is changing in western Wisconsin. Then, if we've got time, we'll get into where the U.S. Farm Bill is at. I'm joined by UW Extension Crops and Soils Educator Jerry Clark, Craig Meyer of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and President of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, Jim Holt. The number again, 1-800-228-5615. If you are listening and have a burning question or a comment, give us a call. Let us know. Otherwise, post it online on our Facebook page. So we spoke just a bit about hay, and I've seen a lot of stuff about hay online. I know that the Farm Bureau has a farmer-to-farmer network that maybe we can talk about in a bit. But, Jerry Clark, what's going on with hay? Why is there such a problem with that?
Well, last year we started to see that price of hay start to rise. Supplies were limited, and basically it had to do with the drought throughout the southern part of Wisconsin, throughout most of the Midwest, mm-hmm. Down into Texas where a lot of our hay is produced. And as far as marketed hay, farmers in this area typically will buy hay if they need it from maybe the Dakotas or Texas, or find, you know, what they call western hay. It's higher quality and doesn't get rained on as much or have that risk of rain damage. But there was limited hay last year because of the drought. Well, then going into this winter, we had a drought here in Wisconsin basically from August through November last year, especially in northwestern Wisconsin here. So we had our drought more on the fall, and so what we think happened was alfalfa plants maybe went into fall a little bit more stressed than normal, and then of course this very long winter we had a lot of ice. We had some rain, I believe, in December, January that formed ice, especially in low areas of fields, and then of course going into this spring, very long winter, snow in May, which maybe wasn't that detrimental, but the fact that it was very cold and slow in developing. Farmers had limited hay supplies, and then we noticed that the alfalfa that was in the fields was injured or killed due to all this stress that it went through over the past 6 months leading into spring. So what we're seeing are hay prices staying high, hay supply is low, then of course a delayed first cut harvest didn't get that done until about mid-June. So we were seeing animals getting out on pasture, you know, grasses and pastures just slow greening up. So we were seeing a hay shortage continuing, and we're expecting that through this year. The fact that we couldn't get our corn planted, silages, you know, is going to be late. We're also looking at, we couldn't get alfalfa established, these types of new crop established. So we're just going to see a lower supply of hay this year. And so prices are staying up for those farmers that need to purchase hay, which again just bites into the bottom line even further.
Generally, how many cuttings can a farmer get if they've got their own hay supply per year?
Yeah, typically we look at three to four is pretty common. Last year being so early, we saw five in several cases. So this year we're probably going to see three. There might be a fourth that's late, maybe into fall, if dairy farmers really need that hay, which we're expecting they will. So we're seeing maybe that extra cutting is going to be later than usual this year.
And Jim, you imagine you try to grow your own if you can help it. Are you going to be importing any hay, do you see, expect?
Well, yeah, my livestock that are using a forage like that are pretty much on pasture. I have some Angus cattle that are pastured, and I have brought in a semi-load of hay already because currently, first off, the damage that, as Jerry explained, the perennial hay crops were slow coming out of spring and behind. Plus, it's turned quite dry now since late June, so I've actually got my first load of hay in and cattle are on that right now, so.
All right. We did have a caller on the line, Diane, in Fall Creek, I believe, was going to ask about armyworms. Unfortunately, she wasn't able to join us or stay with us until I could take the call. But anything? Are we seeing any armyworms? Is the 7-year cycle coming around, Jerry Clark?
Well, typically with armyworm, we'll see them. They're migratory. They typically blow in on southerly winds, so we might see them. You know, there's a first generation that comes out late June. Even insects are a little bit delayed, you know, by a week or two in their development because of cooler weather. But armyworms are always can always be an issue just because they're migratory and depends where our winds are coming from. But also the fact that grassy areas, they like to deposit eggs, and then that second generation moves out about this time of year. So not that there's a widespread problem right now, but I think this is the time of the year to always be scouting, check those grass, especially the edges of cornfields, and they'll move in from there. So those are armyworm can always be an issue every year. Being that it's drier, they could be more of a problem this year.
I just remember, I don't know how many years ago it was, but up in along the north shore of Minnesota and in Superior, where I was originally from, it was so bad that people were sliding off the roads because they were squishing them so bad. Disgusting. All right, well, let's transition here a little bit. Jim Holt, the Farm Bureau, is there a farmer-to-farmer network? Am I right about that as far as trying to get some hay exchanges going?
Well, we've tried to help with farmers contacting in need, contacting sources that had feed, and it's kind of a on again, off again, depending what the need is and what the year is. So we try to facilitate the communication in between when we can, but always let those farmers work out their deals and in their private nature. So.
And I had also seen that the DNR was offering hay from state lands for farmers to come in and maybe get some hay, I believe.
Yeah, I think as, there's declarations from different government officials that will allow participation of farmers that are in other programs or lands that are enrolled in programs to be harvested. And, of course, your county has to be declared as an emergency county for that to happen.
And I see now that the caller says they had armyworms. What can be done about them?
Okay. With armyworms, basically, again, it gets to that scouting where you want to see how many you have per plant and the size of them. Mm. So typically, if they start to get over 3/4 of an inch in length, they're just about done feeding. So you want to see how big they are and how many you have per plant. And if you've got one per plant and they're smaller, then there's probably a treatment that needs to be done, especially around the perimeter. They usually come in from the edges of the fields where it's grassier, weedier. And then as they move in, they'll just continue to march just like that's why they're called armyworms. They march across that field. Mm-hmm. And, they'll make it look like pineapples pretty quick if that population gets higher. But sometimes it's just a perimeter spray if they want to use an insecticide. If they're organic, probably not a lot of options that can be done. There are some registered organic products that can help knock them down. Mm-hmm. But you'd have to keep on them and keep scouting. That's what we always recommend is to manage and scout those fields to see where the damage is occurring.
Very good. Some folks look at farming and may think of it as sort of a stagnant thing. You know, they're always driving down the highway. They always see the corn crops. They always see whatever. But from what I have learned, after taking a visit to Farm Technology Days, that couldn't be farther from the truth. Overall, first I want to talk about the crops of choice. And we've talked about this before, Jerry, when you were on the program, and we can go to the gentleman as well. But since the price of corn is high, we've seen a large change in what kind of crops are going into the ground in western Wisconsin, haven't we?
Yeah, sure. That's definitely made a difference over the last 2 years where corn prices have been higher. The other thing is kind of a shifting from a dairy-dominated agricultural economy for western Wisconsin to start to move towards more of a grain production, corn, soybean, maybe winter wheat type of operations. And a lot of that has to do maybe with – it could be a little social part of it as our farmers get a little older, dairy farmers, or if they don't have anyone to take over the family farm. They still have the equipment to plant and harvest corn or soybeans, so it's easy to make that transition to from dairy to a cash grain operation where we just plant corn and soybeans. Mm-hmm. So there's that aspect of it where we're seeing that change. And we've got two good markets for corn with the ethanol plants in Boyceville and Stanley nearby. As well as the Mississippi River. We've got a pretty easy outlet to get grain exported away from, there's a market nearby. So that we've seen that change over time from that dairy dominated to more of a grain based economy as well.
And Jim Holt, weren't you in dairy at one point?
Yeah, I was a dairy farmer for over 20 years and chose to leave that part of the industry in the late 90s, transferring to the beef business and cash grain.
Okay, why was that? Was that for social reasons, as Jerry had mentioned? Were you getting a little long in years and decided to...
Well, I guess it's getting long in years is the goal, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I had some health issues at that time that made it a decision point. I had to make a decision whether or not to build a new facility or to maybe change the style of farming I was doing. So my wife and I made that decision to leave the dairy part of it. But
okay. Well, as far as crops that are concerned, have you had any changes in what you're planting or what you've heard from members?
I think Jerry's pretty accurate that with the higher prices for the corn and soybean regimen in the last few years, there's been an easy transition for many farmers to that. The other thing I would point out is that agriculture is always changing, and one of the changes we've seen over time is kind of moving to the two ends as far as on the size and scale, where we tend to have more larger farmers and we have more smaller farmers, and the ones in the middle have tended to go away. Or they've reduced in number, at least. A lot of people in smaller ag type situations where they may be full-time farming or they may have a job off the farm as well, but producing products that are maybe direct marketed to consumers. And then also the increase in size of not only grain farmers but also livestock farmers having quite large operations, well-run, still family organizations, but of a larger nature.
Are family farms disappearing, Craig Meyer?
I would say that yes, they're shrinking in numbers. It's I'll agree with Jim that the middle of the road size operations. It's tough because you're not raising enough, maybe to keep other family members joining in the mm-hmm. operation. So what do? You make the next jump and go large, or maybe people leave and go off the farm and get a off-farm job? And so it's, I agree, I think the younger people that are getting into agriculture because of the capital outlays now to get into it, you're seeing more of the CSAs, or they're getting into mm-hmm. the organic side just because it's a little easier to get into farming that route. So yes, it's... we're going through change here rather rapidly.
Well, let's talk about that. You know, the expense involved for someone, you know, my age, you know, I'm 30, and if I just all of a sudden decided I'm going to be a damn farmer and I wanted to get into crops, you know, cash crops, how difficult is that for someone that's just starting out? I mean, how capital intensive is it, Craig Meyer?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, the cost of equipment, whether it even be used or, I mean, new machinery, I was quite high.
like hundreds of thousands
yes.
of dollars.
So, I mean, the investment into land, even land prices are, you know, quite high at this time. I mean, to get into even a medium-sized operation, I don't know, you're talking a million, mm-hmm. or, you know, depending upon what you're getting into.
And yeah. Craig makes a good point here, is getting into it, there's different options, you know, versus renting versus buying, but we've seen that rental rate go up so high mm. on land rent across the state just because of the high price of corn and soybeans. So landowners see that as, oh, well, you're making more money, I can charge more for my land, or there's a demand. Dairy farmers needed more land for expanding dairies, or if a cash grain farmer needs it for you know, just more volume of sales. You know, supply demand really drives that that rental cost. So, as a new person trying to get in to get some land, you know, if you're going to pay $200 to $400 an acre just for land, and then on top of that, there's production costs of $500. You know, you're talking, you know, possibly $800 to plant 1 acre mm. of corn. And so there again, you have to have a very good marketing plan of when estimating how much yield I'm going to get, protecting it with crop insurance, obviously, and then you know, marketing that at a price that you can be at least break even with.
Do you have any sense, Jerry, what percentage of the land out there is being rented versus owned? I mean, is there a shift in that going from ownership to renting?
Yeah, I think there's. It's a lot easier for farmers to run their finances with rented land. They don't have this huge capital outlay or have to borrow money to buy land. And then if they can find someone that's getting out of a retired farmer that isn't going to milk cows or put in crops anymore. But then once somebody finds out that that land is available, then the bidding war starts and the price tends to go up. What that percentage is, it's hard to guess, but it might be approaching 50-50.
Really?
For what's owned and what's rented.
There's nowhere, I'm thinking as a reporter now, there's nowhere that's listed like I can quantitate.
Well, yeah, I think we could. Yeah, we could probably find that. Farm Service Agency, all farmers have to report their crops, okay. And they would know, I'm sure, what's rented and what's owned. So we can find it.
Craig Meyer, you mentioned before the program started to me that that you do rent some land. And is that just to supplement what you've got, or are you kind of switching to rental versus ownership?
Well, the ownership, I should say, I have a partnership with my sister. We have for 20 some years now. But, we were in dairy farming, got out in the early 2000. we both had off farm jobs for a while, and I've since come back home, gone full time farming again. But it's the size factor of, as costs go up, as living costs go up, it takes more money. And so if some land comes up available next door, you kind of go after it and try to keep your operation going. I mean, I've got two sons. I don't know if they're ever going to want to farm, but it's maybe a possibility. So you're always trying to look down the road.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about agriculture this hour on the West Side. I've got three guests, Wisconsin Farm Bureau President Jim Holt, District Director for the Wisconsin Farmers Union, Craig Meyer, and UW Extension Crops and Soils Educator, Jerry Clark. If you'd like to get a question or a comment in to our guests, the number 1-800-228-5615, and we've got all the phone lines are open at this moment in time. So I'd like to talk about soybeans. I work with a reformed farmer, Dean Collenbeck. That is, he left the dairy industry, dairy farm, the family farm, to go into the much more lucrative radio business. I say that.
You're laughing.
Yes. But he tells me that when he was young, soybeans were not very popular. There wasn't a lot of soybeans in the ground. But yet today, there are many, many soybean fields in our region. What happened there, Jerry Clark?
Well, I think, for an example, I started with Extension in 1998. We had about 10,000 acres of soybeans in Chippewa County. Mm-hmm. We now are approaching 45,000. So we've seen this, tripling over 15 years of soybean. And part of it is, I think, again, getting back to farmers, dairy farmers that got out of the dairy business, they knew how to grow corn. But then what do you do with this alfalfa? You're going to sell the hay or make the hay, and that's probably the one thing that turns a dairy farmer off more was making hay, especially if you had baled hay. Chopping hay is a little more mechanical, but baled hay always had that human labor part to it. So I think those alfalfa acres that dairy farmers, when they retired out of the business, converted them to soybeans. And then it's a good rotation between corn and soybeans. Soybean being a legume, it provides a little nitrogen for the corn crop. Both can be harvested with the same, planted and harvested with the same type of equipment. Just need a different head for the combine. And so it's somewhat of an easier transition when you already have the corn established to pick up soybeans as that additional crop. So I think that's kind of what helped. We saw that increase.
Craig?
I think also the soybeans, as you say, the hay disappeared. You needed a crop rotation. So the bean became viable in this area. And that's, I think, what drove it too.
Right.
Very cool. We've got a caller, and we're going to go straight to them so we don't lose another one. But going to Alma. And Mark, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. Are you there, Mark?
Yes, I am.
All right. What's your question or comment?
I don't know. I've watched as dairy farms disappear around the countryside, and
And, of course, I'm down here in the Driftless area of Wisconsin, but we're not flat, black, and square. And when we lost the dairy farms, we lose that ability to utilize hay, which is beneficial for all it really helps with the erosion control. Anyway, I've been farming for 43 years. I've never seen such erosion as I see as I drive around the countryside this year. Mm. Huge ditches. That's all corn and beans. And, you know, it's a sad thing. We've lost a lot of soil, went down the river. And it's changed as everything keeps changing. I realize it. But, like I say, this isn't Iowa. And it's not, you know, everybody's driven by the desire to plant these cash grains, but we're losing something in it.
Oh, is that even with no-till?
Well, you bet. I mean, you're supposed to, you know, a lot of people, they talk about no-till, but I wonder how many of them really are no-tilling anymore. They go out with tools called turbo-tills and everything else, And we no-till here. We contour strip. We rotate crops. We're a dairy farm yet. And our farm dictates that we have to have some hay. So we continue to milk cows.
All right.
In fact, Jerry's been on our farm already.
Yep. Yep. No, Mark.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Mark.
My concerns are about soil conservation.
Mm-hmm. Soil conservation. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, and Mark's right on. I mean, that's true. As farmers transition out of that, hay, that's one thing with alfalfa and hay with the grass is it really holds the soil in place. Mm-hmm. And when you look at grass waterways and contour strips, that's their place is to hold that soil in place or divert water. But that's one thing corn and soybeans, especially soybeans, don't do that good of a job is unless you have other practices involved with it. You can lose soil, and of course, there's more tillage involved, or can be with these with soybeans and cash grain crops. So, most farmers have to have a conservation plan in place, and they get developed, but hopefully, they're following them, and that is an issue if we end up transitioning into a row crop system. We will probably see more soil erosion.
And Craig Meyer, I know that the farm union is big on conservation programs for land, and that's been kind of there's been some cuts to that this year. But what about the erosion problem, and what do you tell your members that are concerned about it?
Well, yeah, I agree with Mark. It's excuse me, it is a problem, and I'm going to go back to it. I know we've talked about the dairy farmer and the retiring, and it's easier going into cropping. But economics-wise, back when my partner and I, when we sold our cows in the late 90s, 2000, we had $8-$9 milk. You just couldn't take that. And I think from an economic standpoint, if our dairy prices had been better, we'd have more cows on the land, and those farms would still have hay on them, and it wouldn't be much better, but the economics part of it drove too many guys out of the dairy business, and it's sad.
All right, well, that's that. If anyone else has a question or comment, we could probably squeeze one more in. The number is 1-800-228-5615. We're going to take our final break here. When we get back, we'll just touch on the farm bill before we wrap up the hour. You're listening to The West Side. We're talking about agriculture in western Wisconsin. Spoke the first part of the hour about this late spring or a wet spring and a late winter, just kind of awful planting conditions for a lot of parts of the state. Now we're talking about the changes, technology, etc., and we're going to get into the politics, I guess, if we can if we can get in there. This is The West Side. You can give a call in 800-228-5615. We'll be back in just a bit.
Support for WPR comes from the Marcus Center for the Performing Arts with their Live at Peck Pavilion concert series along the Milwaukee River with the Dunwells, blending English rock and American roots, Tuesday, July 30th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets at marcuscenter.org.
Support also comes from A Second Opinion magazine dedicated to local alternative health and wellness. The current issue provides tips for eco-friendly and local Christmas and gift ideas. Details are available at asecondopinionmag.com.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening this morning. We're talking about agriculture in western Wisconsin. We've got three guests who are very knowledgeable on the subject. Wisconsin Farm Bureau President Jim Holt, he's a beef farmer and raises crops in Elk Mound. Also, we've got District 4 Director for the Wisconsin Farmers Union, Craig Meyer. He's a crop grower near Osseo. And UW Extension Crops and Soils Educator Jerry Clark, an ag expert by my standards. He works for Extension in Chippewa and Eau Claire counties. The number is 1-800-228-5615. We've got time for one more call if you'd like to get a question or comment in to our guests. Other than that, let's talk about the Farm Bill. U.S. farmers are still without a Farm Bill. Last month, the House of Representatives passed a revised Farm Bill that was kind of historic in nature. It was the first Farm Bill since the early 70s not to include the Supplemental Nutrition and Assistance Program, otherwise known as SNAP, otherwise known as food stamps. So both organizations, the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union, put out statements on this. And Jim Holt, you mentioned that this bill was far from perfect, but you're still hoping that something can get through. Explain your position on that, if you could.
Well, thank you. We think that updating and modernizing of the Farm Bill is an important thing. And I think we are convinced that concentration on projects related to conservation and also to risk management is the appropriate role for government to play. I'd like to back up just a moment, though, and point out to our listeners that we talk about the Farm Bill and the dollars involved. Many people don't realize that the food stamp, the SNAP program, is 80% of the cost of the Farm Bill,
mm-hmm.
and the remaining 20% are farm programs. So, and the real challenge seemed to be with the House passing the portions of the SNAP program, and that's why they set that aside and passed just the farm programs one to this date. And we're hopeful they'll get back to it and get both passed and have a conference committee to work out a final bill.
Okay. And Craig Meyer, the National Farmers Union president, says that this bill, by splitting out the food stamps or the nutrition part of it, is eroding bipartisan support and kind of killing the hopes of passing the Farm Bill at all. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think the Farmers Union has talked about that the Farm Bill without the nutrition program, it's a food part of our national policy, and to have one without the other doesn't really make sense. And so we have really stressed that they need to stay together. And the Senate had a version of Farm Bill, has passed it twice, and can't seem to get a conference together with the House. So,
in the meantime, what does it mean for farmers not to have a Farm Bill passed at all? I mean, it's been, how long is it? It's just been, seems like forever.
Well, they keep extending the last Farm Bill, 2008, and mm-hmm. the last I read, there's fear that it may have to happen again. I don't know. Okay. Nothing seems to want to be done out there.
So. Yeah, they don't seem to be getting a lot of work done in Washington. Jim Holtz, what does it mean for your operation? I mean, the extension, I remember hearing that there was going to be a dairy cliff that we could have been pushed over. That might have been some rhetoric, but what does it mean to farmers not to have a bill passed?
Well, in the dairy portion, whenever the current legislation expires, if nothing to replace it has been passed, it reverts back to law that was created in 1949 related to dairy.
Right.
And that's very outdated and really is not a logical place to go. So oftentimes the extension is what happens, as Craig pointed out. And we'd be disappointed if there's another extension. We would really appreciate the congressman sitting down and finding compromise and getting this done. And we think the general framework of the Senate passed bill is appropriate, moving away from direct payments, more emphasis on a risk management for farmers, and more emphasis on conservation programs. So that's what our hope is.
All right. One last caller. We're going to get Christy on the air. Christy in Chippewa Falls, thanks for calling in.
Thanks for taking my call. There are some of us who are concerned, and I understand ag is a business and the crops need water.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing a lot of the large capacity center irrigation wells, and one question I have is, what is the science known about filtrating of, you know, the herbicides, pesticides, fertilizers as water goes through the soil down into the groundwater? And then also the concern of our water table going down or diminishing as we pull more up.
All right.
Thank you all the time.
Christy, thank you so much. I'm going to put that to you, Jerry Clark. Some big questions there. What do you
yeah,
got? Yeah.
Well, and
could you please answer them within 2 minutes?
Well, I'd encourage Christy to contact our office in Chippewa Falls. We can extend the discussion with her then. But, yeah, there are definitely concerns. Most of these high-capacity wells are putting out about 1,000 gallons a minute for a crop. As far as what is going to I would say fertilizers like nitrogen especially, that's the one that could leach to groundwater. I think in several cases where there's a very intense agricultural area, especially on sandy soils, again, it gets back to this soil type. And, of course, if you have sandy soils, they're going to dry out. That's where irrigation is going to be. And so nitrogen has a tendency to leach a little bit more under excessive water. So whether it's natural rainfall or if it's over-irrigated, and most farmers aren't going to over-irrigate because it's expensive. They're putting on just what that crop needs on a day-by-day basis. But typically the pesticides will be metabolized by the plant and the soils pretty quickly. That's not so much of a concern as the nitrogen does have that potential to leach to groundwater.
All right. That was very well said and perfect timing.
Yeah, thanks, Rich.
That's our time. I'd like to thank my guests for their discussion this hour. Craig Meyer is the District 4 Director for the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Jim Holt is the President of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. And Jerry Clark is a crops and soils educator with UW Extension. Gentlemen, many thanks. Nice job. Good conversation. I'd also like to thank Team Westside, including Mort Cypress, for handling on-air production. Chia Vang for producing this program and wrangling the guests. Nice job. And Hillary Crizan for promotions. And, of course, Dean Collenbeck for giving me that egg insight as a former farmer. Once a farmer, always a farmer, eh, Dean? I'm Rich Kramer. Have a safe and productive week, and we'll chat again next Monday morning right here on the West Side.